Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rumble, band.video, Vigilante TV, YouTube, we're back. Holy moly, it's been 4 years. Or you're listening wherever podcasts are served. Thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. If you haven't rated the show yet, please do. Take a couple seconds to do that. If you like this episode, share it with your friends and family. Macroaggressions.io is the website if you want to connect with me and find out what we're working on over there. Our sponsors are amazing. They help to keep this show. There we go. There's the star, the real star of the show. Just Dr. Rose's cat, for those who are listening at home. But for those who are interested, chemical-free body, I'll tell you what. We've got the best supplements out there. Tim James and the crew are insane about making sure that the chemicals stay out of their products. And chemical-free body has been with me since the very beginning. I take Green 85 every morning. I promise you I do. It's fantastic. It looks like green pond scum, but it tastes pretty good, and it's extremely good for you. Pair that with the detox bundle, the 3 month, 90 day program, lean you out pretty good. I encourage you. Also, check out the Water Hero if you're looking for structured water. He has a solution for you. You can get a little pitcher size contraption, or you can get the piping that fits right onto your house itself. So you can have structured water in your home. I'll tell you what, best thing to do, go find out about it. Go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro. Read up all about what Tim James and the people are doing over there and have fun. Also to Legal Shield, they've been in business for over 50 years in the US and Canada. Get you access to an attorney in your area for $1 a day, $30 a month. It's the best money you'll ever spend. Make sure you've got your medical directive, your financial power of attorney, and your last will and testament done, just in case you need it. You don't want to be scrambling for this at the wrong time when you're in a hospital or something like that. So let's knock this out now. Let's be proactive about it. With Legal Shield, you'll get an app on your phone. You can knock it out in the first month. I suggest you do that. So best place to go to find out all the information about this is the website they built specifically for us. Don'tgetpushedaround.com is where you go. Find out everything about Legal Shield and make sure that you are protected when the insanity comes. Well, Hopefully the insanity doesn't come. But if it does, luckily we have the good doctor with us, Dr. Jessica Rose. Hello, Dr. Rose. It's great to have you here on Macroaggressions, although you've been on Union of the Unwanted plenty of times, and I've always wanted to talk to you. I'm really grateful that you finally had an hour for us, so thanks for coming on the show. How are you?
I'm good. I want structured water in my life.
Yeah. It's an amazing system. I tried it when he had it in Mexico. You know, Mexico has problems with the water. And when you ran it through this pitcher, it came out perfect. I was like, wow, that's a pretty good test. So yeah, I want structured water in my life too. What's that?
It's a pitcher that you can buy?
Yeah, he has a pitcher version of it, and he also has one that it looks, I don't know how to describe it, it's like a tube, and you have to have a professional plumber install it on your house, but if you do, you'll get structured water right into your house. It's pretty expensive, it's like $2,000, but it's structured water in your house, so I guess you have to pay for quality, but something to consider, you know, something to definitely consider. I think our water is poisonous, among other things. Not that you don't know about the poisons that are flowing through our system here. My goodness, where do we even start? Could you just explain? I know who you are and what you're doing, but just in case somebody's listening here and is unfamiliar, what have you been doing these years? You've been taking a lot of the arrows in the vaccine community. A lot of people want to be angry about vaccines and rightly so. It's been interesting to watch the doctors get picked off one at one. What was your experience with coming out, speaking out against vaccines and all of this in the medical industry?
Interesting, primarily because I'm not anti-vaccine at all. I have a heavy science background. I'm very data science oriented. I'm against harms. So what I've been doing for the last 5 years is checking out adverse event data and pharmacovigilance databases, which are, you know, they're government databases that surveil safety signals that are emergent from, you know, reports from human beings in temporal proximity to getting a vaccine. So it's not disputable that the signals in the context of the COVID-19 shots are there. You can't even use the word anomalous to describe it. It's like the difference between an average of 39,000 adverse events reported per year for all vaccines combined for the last 30 years compared to 1 million reports in 1 year alone in the context of one product. I mean, come on now. Like there's nothing to refute or dispute here. I mean, there's more than a safety signal. And it's like, That's just the overall number, but we're talking about 14,000 different Medra-coded adverse event terms here, from death to, you know, transverse myelitis. I mean, it's a huge spectrum of adverse events that we're talking about that involves every single system in the human body in the context of one product. So, you know, if you want to argue that the COVID shots aren't causing anything, then what you have to do is you have to prove that that's not true. You know? Because the data suggests otherwise. Right. And so, yeah, basically all me and, you know, a bunch of other people have been doing for the last 5 years is like saying, hello, you know, can you look at your own government data set and address it, first of all? And second of all, can you do the causality assessments that you're supposed to be doing subsequent to finding an emergent safety signal in your own data set? So yeah, that's the gist of what I've been doing for the last 5 years.
How familiar were you with VAERS before you got into this? Apparently, so you're looking for anything out there that's causing damage, right? And of course, the COVID vaccines jump on your radar for obvious reasons. But were you working in the VAERS system prior to that? And did you know about the 2009 Harvard Pilgrim study that showed that really like 1% was getting through, 1% of actual adverse effects were getting reported? So this was all new to you. So at the same time you're learning about what's going on with the COVID shots, you're like, well, let's check the reporting system. You're like, oh my God, what's going on with this reporting system? This is no better, right? So what was your initial thoughts when you took a look at what VAERS was up to?
Well, it was just obvious what was going on. And I'm unbiased on this subject matter. Like I've been injected with every single vaccine known to man prior to, a certain year. I'm not anti-vaccine at all. I'm not even anti-inoculation. I think the concept is beautiful. It's just been bastardized. Yeah, it's just, I'm a pattern recognition person. I look at data, biological data, clinical trial data, and any kind of data, I just look for patterns. And the emergent patterns from VAERS, and I picked VAERS because it was very easily accessible. You could just download it from their website as a CSV file. It was just so obvious what was going on. Like it has a purpose, safety signal detection. It's like the fourth phase of clinical trials. After phase three, they make a determination. They say, oh yes, look, it's safe and effective. And then they go from a small number of people that they tested this drug on, or the prodrug on, to a very large number of people in the general population. And pharmacovigilance is necessary in those circumstances because, there are demographics that aren't covered in the clinical trials because there's a large list of exclusion criteria. So it's really, 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 really important to do this next step, which I do call the phase four trial. And if you do find something out of the ordinary or something emergent as a safety signal, you have to address it. That's the whole point of this. Right. So, I never delved into this before because I never had to. I mean, I was just a person doing science before. I mean, I was doing a postdoc in biochemistry prior to this in protein biology. I was looking at ABC importers. Nothing to do with this. But as soon as they declared this so-called pandemic in early 2020 and they started enforcing, rules and so-called laws, fake laws and mandates, which had serious impositions on my personal life, in terms of movement. It was like, something is not right here. Like something is cuckoo in the land of the world. And it had nothing to do with the virus. That was very apparent in all of the actions that they took. Anyway, it prompted me to start looking at this data. Especially when I started hearing, that there was this one-shot solution coming up in terms of a brand new experimental product that had two novel technologies involved. I mean, if nothing went wrong, that would have been great, but right. You can't just assume that nothing is going to go wrong when you deploy a brand new technology into the, the general public. I mean, almost everybody got at least one of these shots. Most people got two. A large proportion got three. Some people are still getting them today. Yeah. And you know, if nothing else, it's vital to follow these people and the, you know, the adverse event profile that comes with that. So yeah, the problem I've had primarily and what I've been looking at is the adverse event profile of the people who've been injected with the Pfizer and Moderna shots. So it's not looking good.
What was the level of curiosity from your colleagues? Did any of them have interest in this, or was there just like a wall that went up whenever it, you know, it's one thing you guys are studying proteins in the laboratory that don't have any emotional energy one way or the other, but the COVID component was really, it was political, it was ideological, it was all kinds of things. It wasn't science. Science was the last component of it, but it was all these other things. Did you find that the people in your area of work were asking questions too, or were you isolated in that?
Yeah, I was isolated. I was done my postdoc by the time this happened. My postdoc ended in December. I had planned a trip to Australia to go surfing as, you know, a break after 3 years of hard work. So, yeah, I kind of, you know, I wasn't going to the lab every day, so I don't really know. I would hope that, you know, the people that I worked with and, you know, I had a good connection with, would question what was going on, but I really don't know. What I can say about that is that I've been really surprised by the level of brainwashery that's been successful. You know, the how people feel, and I really mean the word feel, has nothing to do with their intelligence level or how many degrees they have or even life experience or age. It's like it appears as though there's just a subset of people who are susceptible to believing everything that they're being told in the context of the legacy realm, you know, the media, the regulatory bodies, you know, the agencies that are meant to be looking out for us in terms of, you know, disease prevention. Yeah, it's crazy. It's like I'm still to this day called a conspiracy theorist by people who know me, who've known me for like 50 years. It's like, it doesn't really make logical sense. Because I don't fall back on my degrees. I would never do that. Cause I think the whole academic thing is bullshit in one way. But on the other hand, because of the nature of who I am, I'm very curious and I'm very skeptical. I question everything. Like, I don't hold many beliefs per se. So it surprises me that anyone would assume that simply by my questioning something, it would put me in some kind of category, you know, like a tinfoil hat wearing person or something, which yeah. I would be proud to say that I am, I suppose, at this point.
These days, it's a badge of honor. I mean, if not, just yeah. it's a designation that says I was paying attention or I have questions or things don't add up and I'm willing to raise my hand and say, I don't know about this. I have a question about that.
Maybe this little Faraday cage on my head is actually doing something to protect my brain. Yeah, so I don't know. Like, can't even remember what the question was, but yeah, it's been shocking and saddening because there's nothing you can do. You just kind of have to wait for people to come into their own, truth, I suppose, to confront their own, you know, onion peeling situation. You can't rush someone into the future of who they're going to be. You just can't. You can beg questions for them. You can help them to ask their own questions, which I think is the most, it's the thing that works the best.
100%.
Because then you're leaving someone alone with their own thoughts. And so they're battling themselves, which is what they have to do. But yeah, I mean, it takes time and sometimes it never happens. So you just, I don't know, you have to be forgiving, you have to be open, you have to be non-emotional. Just present facts and data. So yeah, that's what I try to do. It's hard though, because I mean, we're watching the destruction of like society, really.
Yeah. And I've had this assumption for a while, and it's incorrect apparently, that if I lay out facts and statistics and I connect the dots and I lay it out in a perfect logical manner and break it down as simply as I can, that's what will convince somebody. And what I've found is that maybe with some people it will, but there's a segment that I can't reach them that way. They're simply just emotional. If facts don't care, they feel a certain way, therefore it is, and the facts be damned. And so I've had to experiment in kind of the way that you mentioned, ask them questions and let them sit with that themselves. It's been the best strategy that I've come to, because I've tried to sit people down and tell them how it is, and that doesn't work. It feels like a lecture. Nobody wants that. But I've done something just as easy as, hey, what do you think about this? I asked a friend of mine, hey, what do you make of there being 38 million cases of the flu one year, and then flu went away, but then there's 38 million cases of COVID. What happened to the flu? And his response was masks. And I went, well, then what about COVID? He said, I don't know, man. It's like two questions. That was all it took for him to not have a real answer. And it occurred to me that like maybe they haven't asked themselves what's going on. What do I think about this? Nobody's asked them any questions. They've only been told this is what's going on. They've been told by the news, or they've been told by the doctors. They've been told by everybody, but nobody's asked them. I asked one simple question. I couldn't get a straight answer. It was amazing to me.
It's really important to be, like, I'll use the word confrontational like that. It is confronting, because it is very simple, just asking a question, which is just a series of words strung together. But it can really do something to someone's, like, neural patterns. It's about habit forming. And I think, you know, in terms of feeling comfortable, you know, going through each day, you know, feeling comfortable, you know, it's important not to challenge yourself too much, because sometimes if you do, you'll get uncomfortable, and most people don't want to feel uncomfortable. But the thing about that is, you might not form new neural patterns and shift out of habits that maybe you shouldn't be engaged in if you don't do that. And this is one of those examples, I think, like, it's hard to admit that these academic journals that we all kind of rely on are run by criminals. I don't know how else to say it. They're all captured. I mean, I always kind of knew they were captured, but I didn't really realize the extent of the cartelness of it all until I started getting my papers withdrawn and retracted and censored. I mean, me?
Right.
I'm irrelevant. Right. Like, why the hell is my work being retracted? That's retarded. Sorry. You know, I know a lot of people are offended by that word, but it's an old school 80s way of saying, you know.
This audience knows.
Anyway,
what's going on?
It's just like, yeah, you. It's hard, man. It's it's all about humanity and what we are as humans, and the fact that we, the great things about us were preyed upon during this whole COVID con. Yeah. We still are being preyed on. All of our benevolence, like to serve the greater good. Like for me, this whole thing has ruined that concept. It's ruined rainbows. It's ruined, you know, cool colored hair. I'm sorry, but it has. I mean, and you might think, oh, wow, she's jumping from place to place, but no.
No, I get it.
It's part and parcel. It's about transhumanism. It's about, like, making humans into automatons. Seriously, it is.
Wait, mission accomplished, is it not? Because it feels like, and I wonder if this is, there's so many people, I watch them, and I don't know that they've had an original thought in quite a while, and it feels like an NPC, like a flood of NPCs out there, and I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I can't deny that when I go through the world that it doesn't really feel like I'm surrounded by zombies. You know, there are levels of it, right? There are people who are just disengaged or disconnected because they're, you know, engaged with this device in their hand. But there are people who are disengaged on another level, that seem more like these non-player characters, I guess is the term, which does get me thinking about other things, like, you know, whether or not we're in a simulation, et cetera. But
me too. But did these shots contribute to this? Because I don't remember it.
There seems to be something like, let's say testable about the impact on brain biochemistry with regard to being able to connect to your surroundings, to the environment that you're in, to other beings in that environment. There does seem to be I don't know if it's quantifiable, but there does seem to be some kind of disconnect. I wish I had a better way to describe it, but I just haven't gotten there yet in my journey, like, into investigating this. But like, it's absolutely real. I mean, there are so many neurological adverse events reported in all the pharmacovigilance databases all over the world. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands reported cases. So if you consider underreporting factors, it's probably way higher than that. And it's not just demyelinating conditions, for example, and neuropathies. It's like there's psychosis involved, hallucinations, all kinds, you know, auditory, visual, all sorts of these. And so there's absolutely something neurological, that there is not neurological involvement with regard to these COVID shots. There's no doubt about that. Nobody can refute that. The numbers are just too high. So the mechanism of action is what we need to nail down. Like, I don't even fathom a guess. I mean, there's a video about this God gene thing, and like that, you know, they quote unquote set out to like turn off the God gene so that they can disconnect you from etc. I find that an intriguing hypothesis because, and I don't want to go down too deep into rabbit holes, but the thing is, we are in the era of gene therapy. And we're being lied to consistently by these governing bodies So it's really hard to believe that what they told us we were being injected with these COVID shots is actually what it was. I hate that thought, but it's true. And because CRISPR-Cas9 is real, I mean, it works. You can, you know, cut out genes, you can modify genes, you can do whatever you want. It's a working technology. It's hard for my brain not to go there. Like, even if not now, even if not that's what they've done up to this point, you know, it's definitely in the pipeline. And there are some really evil bastards out there. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Nobody can refute that. And a lot, unfortunately, it's statistically confirmable that a lot of psychopaths end up getting, well, there's some kind of correlation between being very rich and psychopathy. Because in order to get really rich, sometimes you have to kind of forget about hurting humans in order to make a lot of money. This is just how it is. Like, so a lot of these ultra rich people, eugenicists, for example, we all know examples of those. Yeah. You know, they probably think that they're doing the right thing. But people who are, you know, being targeted probably don't. No. Nonetheless, there's, you know, it involves, I'm going to say it, it involves a certain level of psychopathy to get to the point where you're going to be making billions of dollars off the backs of human suffering. Of humans who are suffering, for example. I know that sounds very dramatic, but I mean, it's...
No, it's, not to me. History. Not to
look at where...
Not, I'm in the middle of writing a book about eugenics. So I mean, I'm all over the topic. Like, I know that... I know it. The first time you hear it, of course, it sounds crazy. It sounds like something that would be incompatible with, you know...
No, I mean, this is a part of our history.
Yeah, and then you find, well, yeah, this has been going on for quite some time. And I wonder, you know, I go back to what Rudolf Steiner talked about 100 years ago, saying, you know, at some point there will be a vaccine that will disconnect our soul. And I wonder if they didn't just find it. You know, they eventually figured it out because is this the calcification of the pineal gland, a disconnection of the God molecule or particle or whatever it is? There's a light that has gone off in the eyes of some people, not everybody with every shot every time, but there's some people that I've noticed that they're not themselves. They're easily agitated. They're very angry. These get set off. It feels almost like an older person with some sort of brain disorder who gets irrationally angry and starts screaming at people, you know, a little old lady who starts going off. I've had these experiences with people that were normally very nice. There's that sweet cat. And I'm watching it happen. You know, it had been theoretical, and now I'm starting to have people in my own lives who are behaving in a different way. And so I'm with you. I can't deny that this is happening. I'm not qualified to go in and say exactly what it is. I don't know, but I know that there's something, and it's something I can't really put my finger on. When you were going through your work with VAERS, with everything that you've been working on the last couple of years, did you see... We were told that there was going to be a big spike in mortality in 2020, right? This is the pandemic. Everybody's going to die. And then we're going to get the vaccine and everything's going to be fixed. And then that will drop off. Did you see that? Did you see big spikes in mortality in 2020? Or did you see those in 2021, actually, when the vaccines rolled out? Or did you see them at all?
No. I wasn't looking, to be honest with you. But I know people who were looking. And the mortality spikes came after, like, you know, the dissemination of these these so-called vaccines, there's no doubt. I mean, like, you can't... It's not just about pharmacovigilance databases. It's databases you wouldn't think to look at, like life insurance.
Great one. Yes, life insurance. Right? I'm really glad you brought that up, because that was something that was sending people into tizzies. I was listening to Ed Dowd talk about this. I was listening to insurance companies that normally a 10% spike in mortality is a 1 in 200 year event, and they were having 40% spikes in mortality. Interesting angle to this, of all the things. The insurance companies are going to be the canary in the coal mine, aren't they, for this? Because they don't mess around. They're talking about money. They're about money, man. Let's look at the actuary table. I need to know what I'm going to be making. I can't get in on this agenda. This is about billions of dollars. How are people dying, yes or no? And if they are, if they're my customers with policies and they're dying and I have to pay out on this, you know, I need to know what's what. So with the insurance companies, what did they find?
Yeah, so it was working aged people, like young people, where there was this, I don't know, multi-sigma, you know, signal, you know, death signal. You know, I don't describe it well, but like, yeah, a lot of people who shouldn't have been dying were dying at this particular time. So that's what it was showing. And it's like, when you combine that with all the pharmacovigilance data, with hospital data, with word of mouth, you know, people will say, oh, it's just an anecdote. It's not a freaking anecdote if it's a million or millions of people from different countries that have nothing to do with each other all over the world. I mean, there's so many ways you can look at this. And it's not just that it's happening that's shocking. It's the fact that it's been ignored so systemically. I mean, there are some government leaders who, you know, are side-eyeing the whole thing, and good for them. They're going to be, you know, the leaders of the future, because they're not only like not blind to what's going on, but they're actually taking action, hopefully for the, you know, the benefit of their people. Whoever clues into this, you know, the fastest is going to, you know, I don't know how else to say it, but win the human race. Like, you know, they're going to have the best, strongest, most ethical, moral society around. And that's what we need.
Is that Japan?
Like,
is that going to be Japan? Because their studies are out now.
About the you know, Slovakia in particular, I think it was, who turned their back on this. Maybe it was Slovenia as well. Forgive me for not remembering, but potentially Romania as well. There are some places. I don't know. I've been saying this for ages. Like in the context of the legacy media, like, I know that you're a machine. I know that you are paid by certain entities. I know that you guys have to read from teleprompters. But listen, if one of your writers clues into the fact that the people are not dumb and that they're very well aware, especially nowadays, you know, with social media and, like, you know, the internet, etc., they're very aware of what's going on. Whoever taps into the truth and whoever, like, takes a moral stance, and I do mean moral, not just ethical, is going to have the hugest backing by the people. Yeah. You know, it's set in stone. It seems too easy, right? Like, whoever tells the truth, whoever stands on integrity, ethics, and morals is going to be the biggest, you know, winner if you want to put it that way, of all. It's that simple. Because the people, you know, it's just the way that we are as humans. We're hierarchical. We need a leader. Not all of us are leaders. There are some of us, some among us who are leaders. And if those people recognize the importance of listening to the people and you know, addressing their actual needs that you know, resonate with what, not just who they are as a population, humans, you know, dirty, ugly, you know, like beautiful, all the things that humans are, you know, but acknowledge it. Be truthful. They're gonna have the best freaking society of all. And you know, if people adhere to, you know, Universe 25 type politics, then it's just gonna always end in the downfall of society.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, what we're looking at, but whatever.
I wonder how much things change now that the media has really lost their grip. I mean, the mainstream corporate press is not what it used to be. I think what we saw with this the No Kings 2 protest was that the only people who are really getting out and out there in the streets for that were getting their news from the mainstream media, and it was like old boomer age liberals, and that's the only ones that were getting it. And you're like, all right, well, that's the last generation who still trusts the television. That's nice. But of course, they've made the pivot into the mainstream alternative media, right? So it's not just we're not on TV anymore, so you can trust us. Now we're on the computer, right? We're the names you might recognize, but in computer form, you know, a podcast by a guy who used to be ex-CIA or something like that, or Tucker Carlson leaves Fox, the big establishment. Now he's somehow alternative media, even though he's really not. So there's like a new flavor where they're going to try and get the new generation who is distrustful of their TV to find some new leadership group to follow. But of course that'll be compromised. I can't imagine that they're going to allow us to get fresh information from these people. Where do you go? You're pretty good at sifting through what's truth and fiction. Where are you looking for your news when it comes to trying to get a handle on what's going on these days? Is it content person specific? Like, I like Vanessa Beely's writing. I trust her. I read her stuff. Or is it that I like this company that delivers my news?
My first thought is I go inside. I don't really depend on anyone for info. There are some people that I find more reliable in terms of legitimacy. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know any of them. They're just, you know, the nerds in the background. But yeah, I don't know. I just read a lot, and I compare a lot, and I, you know, contrast a lot. I ask a lot of questions. I question myself. You know, I question everything that I read. I double check. As in terms of sources, I mean, Christ, there's nobody who can keep up with the amount of information that's being disseminated nowadays, even in the science realm. I mean, just today, I found a paper that was published really recently, like a week ago, in Science. It's pretty bad. It's a proof of concept thing, and they're only in mice so far, but it's kind of like the nucleoside modified mRNA LNP wrapped technology on crack. I thought the self-amplifying thing was bad, And it is. It's worse conceptually. But this is like, it's a different version of the technology on crack. So what they've done as a proof of concept is, instead of encoding only the spike protein in an mRNA, you know, let's just call it a template, they've constructed an additional piece in the template that serves as the coding material for the scaffold that would mount spike components. And we're talking about SARS-2 spike, and we all know about that, I hope, on its surface. So we're talking about the coding material for a nanoparticle that basically just, it's a spike bomb. There's no other way to say it. It's a protein spike bomb. Instead of one spike, it's like a spike.
Like a sea urchin.
Yeah, exactly. Very good analogy. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Except like billions of them.
Right.
And your own cells, your own cellular machinery is producing these proteins, which eventually, you know, they get constructed and 60 of them come together and they form one of these nanoparticles, which, you know, gets out of the cell and does, you know, the immunological journey. I wrote this up today in my Substack. It's just, you know, it's proof that the COVID era to me was just a segue for the next generation of shit that's coming, that's all going to be based on this exact same technology, which is gene therapy. I'm sorry, it is. You're introducing foreign genes into the human body for, you know, production by the human cell machinery. And unfortunately, if we can go back to the original chicken recipe with just the nucleoside modified mRNA, that stuff can reverse transcribe, which means that it can integrate into your genome. And very recently, me and two colleagues, Kevin McKern and David Speaker, have published a paper that confirms that there's shit tons of DNA in the vials of those COVID products that are meant to be only mRNA. And what that means is a bunch of stuff. First of all, I don't even know where to start with this, because all of the regulatory bodies and these disease prevention agencies, et cetera, the pharmaceutical companies themselves have said, you know, very definitively, like since the beginning, like there's no way that these things are going to have any problem with your DNA because they're mRNA. And it's like, oh, okay. But they knew that was a lie, because DNA was always a recognized impurity as part of the manufacturing process. And because they didn't do due diligence at the end of the synthesis process of this nucleoside-modified mRNA, DNA ended up getting in the vials. And this isn't just like run-of-the-mill DNA. This is plasmid DNA, which includes SV40 promoter enhancers. It includes antibiotic resistance genes. It includes all sorts of stuff which can wreak havoc on genomic stability. And if that, you know, I know I'm going on a rant here, but it's just incredible, like, how many problems there are with this platform as it stands that haven't been acknowledged yet, let alone dealt with. And we're moving on to, you know, version 2.0, or however many versions there have been. it's just crazy to me. It's like, dudes, you can't just come up with new coating material and wrap it in this lipid nanoparticle, which is horrifically toxic by its own safety data sheet. None of this has been resolved. None of it. It's just, okay. I'm presenting a talk in the Netherlands very soon, which is actually going to address all of this stuff, like the safe and effective narrative and how much of a lie that was, with a lot of evidence and data. It's just incredible to me that this mantra, which if you look it up, they used it for DDT as well, or what was that drug that they said would help morning sickness?
The thimerosal. No, not thimerosal. Thalidomide.
Thank you. So that was the narrative they used to sell thalidomide as well. Go back and look at the history of the mantra of safe and effective. It's very telling.
Yeah.
It's a complete lie. And I'm not saying that lightly. It's absolutely, like, if I want to use their language, it's disinformation, which means not only was it not correct, but the people who were saying it knew it wasn't correct.
Right.
And we know that because we have dated documents. So it's... Wow, that was a big rant, and I don't remember where I started, but I guess, right.
I want to talk, when you're with this mRNA technology that comes out, gene therapy, whatever we want to call it, we've now started to have the conversation about turbo cancer, soft tissue cancer, died suddenly. This is making its way into the public lexicon, almost in some respects. When I see it reported by the mainstream media, I kind of half wonder if the person who wrote the article is on our side trying to signal it every time they say died suddenly. Wink, wink, wake up, almost like they're trying to say, wake up. How many times can we say died suddenly until you guys figure it out? So what have you noticed about the explosion in cancers in the aftermath of mRNA technology?
Well, I can tell you what I find in VAERS, which is one of the slides I'm going to present at this talk. Any kind of cancer that you look at, okay, if you look at general cancers, like if you do a query for cancer and tumor in VAERS, it's not just that the numbers, the absolute numbers, are much higher than they've been for the past 30 years. Like, if you compare all vaccines combined against only the COVID shots, it's not just that. If you normalize it per 100,000 reported adverse events, it's still much higher as of 2021. And it's not just that. The scariest part is that the signal, as you go, you know, progressively higher in years, it's getting higher. And that's really significant because people haven't been getting as many shots in successive years as they have in 2021. So what that means is the denominator is smaller and the numerator is, you know, bigger relatively. So the signal is getting it's getting significantly higher as the years go on. Colon cancer in particular, breast cancer. I haven't looked at another type of cancer, but so for general cancer in these two specific types, the signal is increasing, which is by definition, in my opinion, if I was working with HHS or CDC, which I might be soon, I would consider that a safety signal worth investigating further. Like, why is the signal in VAERS for colon cancer, for example, like, why has it increased 4,000% between 2020 and 2021? And why is it increasing, you know, by 500% every year after 2021 when the number of shots being administered is decreasing. You know, I would ask those kinds of questions. So personally, I don't think it's just the shots, but I think what the shots, something about these COVID shots take whatever problems might be existent and push them over the edge. If you're close to death, if you're old, it's going to kill you. But it's clear in the data that that happened. It's very clear. If you have an autoimmune condition that's in, you know, that's suppressed, it'll reemerge. Multiple sclerosis, perfect example. If you have inflammation, which everybody has low level inflammation because we live in a toxic world. You know, you're going to have that amplified as well. If you have a cardiac issue.
Yeah.
It you can just name everything. Like it's just whatever the mechanism of action is, it's immunological for sure. But whatever this, you know, there has to be some kind of commonality. It's weird because it's not everybody who succumbed to adverse events in the context of these shots, but a large percentage of people did. I've been saying about 15%, but maybe it's higher. And we just haven't seen, you know, their adverse event profile because it's too far out. But it's absolutely a real phenomenon, and it's immunologically based. And we have to figure out, like, what is the mechanism of action, or if there are many different kinds of mechanisms of actions within different demographics, for example, so we can help people. That's the bottom line here. Like, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
For sure. What do we do if we've got somebody who's experiencing these feelings? They took the shots. They have regrets about it. They have physical issues. They're starting to freak out a little bit. They're saying, "All right, well, I want to be proactive about this. Maybe I feel okay right now, but I'm worried that maybe I'll feel worse in the future." Where do you send them? You don't want to say it's hopeless. You don't want to say there's nothing to do. There's got to be something you can do.
Well, of course it's not hopeless.
Where do we send them? What can they do to start to purge their body of these poisons or I don't even really know how it works.
I think you send them to nature, and I'm really serious about that. If you don't live in a place where they're spraying acaricides everywhere, then you can and you should ground every single day. Put your bare feet on the ground. I'm not kidding. Saunas are miraculous. I've heard great things about ice baths, which I couldn't tolerate myself, but apparently they have something to do with vagal nerve. Writing, exercise, movement, fascia release, sunshine, the most important thing. I know this sounds kind of granola and you guys might be surprised that I'm saying this, but these are the keys to longevity.
I had Dr. Cruz on here. We talked about sunshine. They know. We talked about grounding. No, my audience isn't going to think it's weird at all. In fact, it's quite, it's really, really is the answer, right? The more you
of course
get
it
closer,
is. It's
closer
getting,
to nature,
it's
further away from
brain, right? Like when you think about how most people spend most of their days in fake light, which is terrible. Like, do you guys know that most of the lighting in most of these buildings that we have now is like flashing like how many times a second? We don't have incandescent bulbs on the dial anymore. So it's like this is doing something to your brain, and it's a certain wavelength. You know, I don't know enough about it, but it's for me. If I spend I'm serious. If I spend even 5 minutes in a fake environment like a mall or a bunch of offices, I'm like I have to get out of there. Like it's like a visceral response to something that is it's not where I'm meant to be, quote unquote, as a human being. It's the opposite when I go out into the sunshine and put my feet on the ground, which I haven't done in way too long. But natural tendency toward the things that kind of made us who we are, the realm from which we developed, technically. And that includes food. Like, you know, some people are vegetarians, some people are vegans, you know, whatever you want to do. I've been at all. But it seems like because we can eat meat, you know, we probably should. Our bodies are designed to tolerate it. So it seems to me logical that we probably should ingest animal fats. As part of, balance, maybe not all the time, but like, I don't know. The main thing I think for everyone to kind of tap into is what's good for you. Like, because every single person is individual. We all have epigenetic landscapes, which we have to deal with. Our environment is most likely providing us with hordes of toxins you might not even be aware of, electromagnetic, you know, light, frickin', you know, endocrine disruptors from microplastics in frickin' everything. Sorry, but it's like
it's everywhere.
It's so hard to avoid all of this stuff. So like minimizing your toxic ingestion from all the branches. And then honing in on like what makes you feel good. And you'll know that. It's just something that comes from inside. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about that.
Let's wrap up with this. Let's get to the real question. Best places you've ever surfed and the place on your list that you still haven't gone that you want to go.
Noosa, of course. And place that I want to go. I don't know. A wave that I want to surf that I haven't surfed. I don't know. It's probably some wave I've never heard of along the, maybe the Pacific Coast, but I don't know.
Where's a good surf trip? Where's a good surf spot? A good surf trip for people to go. I had some friends that were going to Costa Rica. I know everyone loves that. Where would you suggest?
I don't know. I had a good time in Sri Lanka, but Sri Lanka has changed since COVID. You know, everywhere has. El Salvador looks like, you know, it's kind of pumping from all the competitions. Panama, of course. Indonesia. I mean, come on. I mean, there's like some of the best waves ever there. I've never been. Maybe Indonesia is where I would go on a surf trip that I haven't been, that probably has waves that I'd be like, I've been dead until this moment in my life because I haven't seen this wave. Oh my God, I need to surf again.
There's not a whole lot of overlap that I've found between doctors and surfers. Genetic? What are you, a genetic?
Harry Mullis? Are you kidding?
Oh, Carrie Mulligan. Oh, yes. Never mind. I'll take that back. Yeah, he's the king then. So is there a thing? Is that what it is? You do serious, hardcore, heavy brainwave work all day long, and then you zen out on a surfboard?
Nah, it's not like that. It's all the same to me. Like, the way that my brain works when I'm pondering, like, how molecular machines work is the same way that it works when I'm out in the water. It's more detached when I'm out in the water because I'm not thinking when I'm out there. It's more, you know, you go more into a meditative state after a while because, I don't know, it's just what happens. But I'm sure it's the same, like, you know, neural connections connecting. Same thought processes.
Get out of the way of your body. Let your mind just run a little bit free, whether you're on the waves or staring at Petri dishes.
Yeah, I haven't stared at a Petri dish in a long time, though. Not since 2018.
I'm just assuming what your job is. I'm just making.
That was my job when I was in my postdoc. Yeah. I used to. I did a lot of protein purification, so you have to make a lot of protein, and we used an E. coli system. So, yeah. Yeah, I used to wake up in the morning and run to the lab and be like, "Oh, do I have colonies?" Because sometimes, you know, your antibiotic resistance gene wouldn't work out in the way that you hoped.
That's funny. Oh, anyway. How things have changed. Now you're just saving the world. Now you're just saving humanity from these poison shots. Dr. Rose, what's the best place for people to find you? Would it be, obviously, Substack is a great place. I've been republishing Substack over on Activist Post as well. So is there any place else that you would send people to find your work?
Nope. That's about it for now. There might be some stuff coming up in the future, so stay tuned. Yeah, I post on Twitter, though. The number of subscribers is a little bit bigger. But I'm pretty censored on Twitter. And you know, there are some people controlling that platform who don't really like what I'm saying.
That's how you know you're doing it right. Yeah. Well, if you were being boosted by the algorithms, I think I'd probably be a bit suspicious because the
things that we're
talking about are the things that they don't want anybody else to know about. So being de-boosted is actually a badge of honor. That's Dr. Jessica Rose, everybody. Please go support her work. Go to Substack and get yourself educated. Follow her. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the way to do that. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
You won't find a better deal on science-backed pregnancy supplements than at Ritual's Black Friday sale. Get what you really deserve, like a prenatal you can trust. Made with bioavailable key nutrients, it even earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. Save 40% on your first month at ritual.com/pregnancy support. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.